Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah.
Hey, this is Sarah from across the pond in Boston, Massachusetts, and you're listening to the Amazing Tennis Podcast with David Kaftner and Matt. Enjoy the show.
Well, hello, everyone, and thank you to Sarah Lemaire, who introduced today's episode of the Tennis Podcast. Thank you, Sarah. Brilliantly done. I've been to Boston, Massachusetts. Lovely place. And only fitting that our introduction today should come from stateside, because that is where the tennis world is still focused just at the moment. This is our Miami Midway Update podcast. And it's all a bit sort of messy because it's one of these tournaments that isn't quite a two-weeker, probably should be a one-weeker. We can't quite put our finger on what stage the men's and the women's competitions are at, but we know they're at different stages, that much is sure. And these sort of extended 1,000 events is actually something that the ATP are pushing for more of. They want Madrid, Rome, and a couple of others, I think, to be extended events. And that is something that Simon Briggs touches upon in our boots on the ground, live from Miami report from Simon Briggs, which, David, we're delighted to have in the show.
Yeah, yeah. A few hours ago, I just thought, Simon Briggs is in Miami. Let's talk to Simon Briggs. Let's find out what's going on when you're actually over there. We've had Catherine sending voice notes. Maybe Simon can figure out which button to press.
It's not really a podcast anymore if it doesn't include a voice note, does it? It's very much our new thing this year.
It's our new thing, folks. So without further ado, let's hear from Simon Briggs on the ground in steamy Miami.
So I'm wandering around Miami under the palm trees at the Hard Rock Stadium. It's quite pleasant here. The sun is shining. Relatively quiet around the grounds. It's just gone 11 and Cameron Norrie is coming out in court to play Hugo Gaston. So when I come to this tournament, I can't help but think about the old Miami Open, which was staged at Crandon Park on the other side of Miami, which is a very romantic tropical island that had to be reached across a causeway, and it was full of mangrove trees and iguanas and all such wonders of tropical life. And I remember last time I was in Crandon Park, 2018, I wrote a column about the move, and I was up most of the night trying to come up with some arresting imagery and some zingers. And then I went to see Roger Federer next day at his press conference. I asked him about it, and he said, I hope that we look back 30 years from now and say, thank God we made this move, but right now it doesn't feel great. And I thought, well, I've been slaving away over this keyboard for 6 hours and you've basically done it in 15 seconds and 30 words, and that's really quite annoying, mate. But anyway, we've moved. There was a problem with the old site. We couldn't build, or they couldn't build, any permanent structures on it. It became quite tatty, and it looked all the more tatty because it was running immediately after the grand enterprise of Indian Wells, which, you know, is no expense spared with Larry Ellison's investments. So IMG, who owned the event, felt it was time to go. And so now they've come to Hard Rock Stadium on the other side of Miami. It's a big old drive out of town, about half an hour. You go past this kind of wasteland with all these giant billboards advertising stuff like termite exterminators and storage facilities. And then you get to this gigantic structure with huge white masts that feels a bit like a spaceship has landed in Nowheresville. And it's interesting. I mean, the main tennis stadium is built inside the main American football stadium, which is home to the Miami Dolphins, and it's a bit like a Chinese doll situation. And as the press, we're sitting inside the press box of the football stadium and looking through an unfinished corner of the tennis stadium, like we're almost seeing a sort of giant piece of Meccano that hasn't been completed. It's not the best of views, put it like that. But we end up watching either on the telly or going round into a box further round the stadium to see what's going on. I do find that stadium a little bit unsatisfactory. Then we have the outside grounds being nicely landscaped, lots of palm trees, as I say, and nice bars and a little bit of music playing. The grounds haven't been that full this week so far. The attendance hasn't been great. There have been some quiet days. I think Friday, for instance, we had also the matches. I mean, maybe not the most dynamic at times. On Friday, we had Henry Larkson losing 6-1, 6-2 to Casper Ruud on the stadium court. And this just doesn't feel like the kind of occasion that's going to grab thousands of viewers to their TVs or to their chairs. This does worry me a little in the context of what's going on in Miami politically in tennis, which is the ATP and meeting. They're trying to change the Masters format so that three more tournaments are going to go to 12 days. It's in the short term, Rome, Madrid and Shanghai, with Canada and Cincinnati also intended to join them on 12 days in 2025. And I'm just wondering why that is going to be an improvement. Does bigger necessarily mean better? That seems to be the only motivation behind these changes. But if you're spreading the same material over 12 days rather than 7, I just don't see how that's going to help the tournament feel any more vibrant. So we're building up here. I'm sure we're going to get bigger crowds as we get towards the finals weekend. But it hasn't necessarily had great penetration in the kind of the world sports media yet, or indeed particularly full stadia. It just makes me think that this ATP campaign to upscale tournaments is a little bit about style rather than substance.
The ever erudite and entertaining Simon Briggs there, thanks very much for that update. I love that the tennis podcast, or the Simon Briggs manifestation of Russian sanctions, is to rename Russian dolls as Chinese dolls. Well done, Simon. That was excellent. Lots else to pick up on there, not least the very subtle dragging of Laxinen and Ruud and their, what did he describe it, not particularly dynamic match played on the stadium court the other day. He's right, isn't he? The fact is, the tournament thus far hasn't caught alight in a way that I think is exacerbated or highlighted by the schedule. Is that harsh?
The schedule in what regard?
Well, the thin spreading,
yeah,
if you like.
Yeah, no, I take that point. And obviously there are some names, some pretty significant names not there. And Indian Wells had Nadal, and Nadal went all the way to the end and all the rest of it. So that does stand out. And I mean, he's right. When you see Ruud against Laxinen as your big stadium court match, it's not exactly enticing. And I don't mean to be disrespectful to Ruud. I know that does sound that, but it's true. He's not going to pack him in at this stage in his career. Maybe he never will. I don't know.
No regular listener to this podcast, David, is ever going to accuse you of being disrespectful to Casper Ruud.
Quite right. I'd have been there had I been in Miami. But anyway, I wasn't, and I wasn't. It is an interesting one, that thing about extending the duration of these tournaments we have this strange sort of middle ground at the moment, as you say, where here we are on a Sunday and we're kind of a third through the tournament. That doesn't, it all feels very strange, and they're going to maybe extend it further, and then they're going to extend several of the other tournaments further. We have the Madrid tournament where they start the women's tournament about 3 days before the men's. All of it does seem very strange to me in terms of feel, even though I can kind of get the economics behind it and so forth. But it's I haven't been to the Hard Rock Stadium. I haven't been to the Miami tournament since it relocated, but it's I do feel quite nostalgic thinking about Crandon Park, although the place was falling apart. I mean, it, as a stadium and as a venue, it was struggling to be fit for purpose anymore. But there was something special about it as well, and it was very picturesque. We have great memories of it because it lasted for so long. But really, I mean, Simon is there for a week, and really he was there for the Brits. It's difficult to carry the interest of a British writer, for instance, to go over there, unless the big name British players like Raducanu or Andy Murray are really performing, and they were in it early on. And these tournaments are sort of, they're big, but they're not Grand Slams. You know, even though Miami was the Indian Wells of its day, that was always referred to as the fifth slam, and now that's become Indian Wells. But no, I don't know how I feel about extending these tournaments that long. I like the fact that they're mixed men's and women's events, the vast majority of them anyway, and I think the longer as long as that is sustained, then all the better. If making them 2 weeks is the way to achieve that, then fair enough.
Purely as a viewer, because I've never been to the Miami tournament, I never went to Crandon Park, I've never been to the Hard Rock Stadium, so this is very easy for me to say, literally from my armchair, I preferred the feel of watching Crandon Park, but I realised the fact that it was falling down doesn't have implications for me in my armchair, whereas it obviously does for all the people that are there. But purely as a viewer, that's how I feel. I just have a slightly colder feel watching. There's something about a sectioned off stadium that is just inherently just makes me feel a bit literally empty. It leaves me with a slightly hollow feeling.
Yeah, it's not ideal. I mean, I must say, I'm pleased they're back in that main stadium. I think this is better than last year's Miami, where they didn't use the main stadium. I think because there was no need, really, because they couldn't get the crowds in. You know, it's quite a cool feature being inside that big stadium. I just don't know how well it actually works as an experience. It's also got quite an annoying shadow moving across the court during the sort of first couple of matches of the day, which is a pain.
But when we get really desperate for bonus pods for Friends of the Tennis podcast, we'll be doing worst shadows in tennis, most problematic court shadows.
Oh my God.
Honestly, we could do a banging show on that. It'd just be one rant after another. But it would admittedly be niche.
I'm already thinking Madrid, Halle, Miami. Yeah, there's a whole show there, isn't there? But yeah, I think actually that point about extending the 1,000 events generally, I think Simon said it well, style over substance. But again, like you said, I'm talking as a viewer there. As a viewer, I love a packed order of play condensed into 7 days where every day you know there's just going to be non-stop, pretty much, brilliant tennis. And I don't think you quite get that at these 12-day events. But at the 7-day combined events, those order of plays every day are just amazing. And I think you lose something when you extend it over 12 in that respect. I'm sure there are other reasons.
It's like when a legendary artist plays a slightly longer concert and mixes in new material with the bangers. You're like, I'll tolerate it, but I am just sitting and waiting for the bangers. Anyway, let's not be... Look, I'm partly being a grump because I'm watching Miami on the telly and it's bright sunshine and I'm watching my Indian Wells tan fade. Yeah, I can hear the violins. I can hear the violins coming out for me. Let's talk about positive tennis things, which is that we have a brand new... That's Billie Jean growling in the background. She is pleased about this, I promise. We have a brand new...
No, I'm not.
It's her equivalent of a drum roll. We have a brand new women's world number one, and it is Iga. It is Iga Świątek, and she's deserved better than this moment, Billie Jean.
She's a big Świątek fan, and she's just trying to get that over.
That's exactly what's happening, David. Look, it's not the perfect way for her to have ascended to world number one. It felt like she was probably going to end up being a world number one at some stage in her career. But yes, she got there now because of Ash Barty's retirement in the week. Ash Barty confirmed that she's requested that she be removed from the rankings after Miami, which is the next time that new rankings will be released, which meant that Iga Świątek only had to win one match in order to confirm herself as the new number one. And Paola Badosa had an outside chance, but it required Świątek to lose, which, boy, did she not lose. 6-2, 6-love against Victoria Golubic, who has really soared up the rankings recently. I noticed that she was seeded in Indian Wells, and I really did double take at that. But I looked at her rankings trajectory, and she's really had quite a 12 months. You know, Świątek by far the better player, but to put in a performance like that, playing for world number one, I find pretty extraordinary, actually. And I'm so pleased for her that she did that, because I'm sure, knowing the character that she is, there must have been a little bit of weirdness and perhaps imposter syndrome for her about the fact that she was getting to number one that way. So to put in that dominant and imposing a performance, you know, to perform like a world number one, felt important to me for that moment for her.
Yeah, I think maybe Barty helped a little bit by being so effusive about Świątek, both in her sort of retirement interview and press conference, but also previously. You know, she's talked warmly about Świątek. They've had matches against each other. I know Barty's won them relatively comfortably, but I think Świątek already is a different player from those meetings. She's moved on again here, and I just feel that her ravenous appetite to be the best is there for all to see. She does it in her own quiet, very likeable way, but there's a real determination in her to be the best, and she would have been striving for this whether Barty was there or not. And I think she believes in herself more than she ever has. I think she was surprised almost by her level that she found at the French Open when she won it. I don't think she's surprised now. I think she now believes in her ability to play against anybody and show what she's got. And I found the whole thing really comforting, actually, in the wake of Barty's retirement, because that was a jolt, and I'm very happy for Barty if she's happy, but I still feel sad for the sport. I think it is a shame for the sport. And yet, in the days that followed, we had Naomi Osaka playing out of her mind and looking happy and reminding us how great she is when she's on form. And we've had Świątek, who's one of my other favourite players, becoming the world number one and underlining it with a performance like that. That's great.
And it was a very Świątek thing to do, wasn't it? Play and win a match, only losing two games, where she has a lot on the line. She's made that her thing, hasn't she? Just thrashing people when it really matters for her. She just dismisses them. We've seen it in all of her 1,000 event finals. We've seen it in the French Open final she played against Kenin. And now this one, okay, maybe didn't quite have the same pressure because, you know, it was likely she was going to be world number one anyway. But to just emphatically go out there and sort of, as you said, deliver a world number one performance like that was significant. And yeah, very, very Świątek as we learn more and more about her.
They hastily cobbled together a presentation party, didn't they? Because obviously they wouldn't have been expecting to have to hold a world number one ceremony at the start of the tournament. But they produced Lindsay Davenport, of course, a former WTA number one, which I thought was a really nice moment. And what a warm, kind individual to have there with her in that moment. So that was all great. Świątek remains alive in the tournament and is in brilliant form. You mentioned David Naomi Osaka. Well, in total, only 11 out of the 32 seeds on the women's side reached round three. We've lost Sabalenka. She lost out to Irina Camelia Begu. Emma Raducanu lost to Katerina Siniakova again after serving for the match. I think that's three matches in a row that she's lost after serving for it. The tennis level is there, but she's just unable to maintain it. And, you know, she's got a lot going on. Karolina Pliskova lost to Anna Kalinskaya. And at Kontaveit, lost to Anne Lee. Maria Sakkari lost to Beatrice Haddad-Maia. Ostapenko, who'd won the tournament in Dubai earlier this year, hadn't she? She lost to Shelby Rogers. And Elisa Mertens lost to Linda Fravitova. More of her in a minute. She is a 16-year-old who just minutes ago also beat Victoria Azarenka. We will talk about that separately. But for now, going back to the seeds that are missed out, Garbini Muguruza and Simona Halep also withdrew ahead of the tournament. So only 11 out of 32 seeds through. But, of course, one of those unseeded players through is Naomi Osaka, who, on the basis of how she's been playing so far this week, will not remain unseeded for very long. She's told us that she started seeing a therapist. Get me that therapist's number.
Also, she's got a personal vendetta against Caroline Wozniacki, which I'm enjoying
oh,
a lot.
It's great. The most gentle but powerful vendetta. Tell us more, Matt.
Well, I believe she was watching Tennis Channel. I think Caroline Wozniacki's been doing some commentary for Tennis Channel over the Indian Wells-Miami period. And I don't think Osaka really likes knowing about the draw or anything, but she was watching the Tennis Channel and they were going through the draw and she saw her section come up and Wozniacki gave her predictions for the section of who would make it through. And I think she said that Kerber would go through and Leila Fernandez. And Osaka heard this and thought, well, I'm in that section and Caroline Wozniacki doesn't think I'm going to be going through. So I went onto court trying to prove her wrong, basically, was what she said.
Love the fact that she uses the word vendetta.
Yes, she did.
She says, I'm not usually into vendettas.
But I made an exception.
Yeah. Again, give me the therapist's number.
She said, I still feel like I'm a pretty good player. And yes, you
it's
are.
It's interesting, though, because she did play like she had a vendetta against Angelique Kerber. Kerber had won their last four matches. That was she's a banana skin matchup for Naomi Osaka.
Yeah, and I think even more than that, I was thinking back to Osaka's losses last year. She had a bit of a problem against lefties. She lost to Fernandez at the US Open. She lost to Vondrosheva at the Olympics. I'm sure there was another one as well. Jill Teichman, I think, as well, during the American Hard Court Swing last year. So she had, you know, the lefty problem and the Kerber problem to deal with. And yet, like you said, she just dismissed Kerber. I thought Osaka was brilliant. The best I've seen her play in a long, long time. Just so many winners flying off that racket. And it's just a reminder of how good she is. You know, in my mind, when she's at her best on a hard court, she's the best player on a hard court. I mean, I feel more confident saying that now that Ash Barty has retired, actually, because that was a matchup which we did see a little bit, but, you know, not enough. And I'm going to continue to be sad about that. But yeah, I'm very, very happy that Osaka's playing like this again. And I love the way Wim Fassett apparently put it to Osaka that maybe seeing a therapist would be a good idea. You know, he said, you hire me for tennis, you hire, you know, someone for fitness. Why would you not hire someone for your mind and your mental health? And I think she went onto the court with some techniques this week in Miami, which she's been putting into practice. And yeah, it's really great to see. I think a lot of people are pulling for Osaka and want the best for Osaka. And I sort of really felt that momentum behind her this week so far.
And of course, in many ways, this is a home tournament for her because she lives a lot of the time in Florida and trains there. So it's great to see her looking comfortable and at home. It was not great to be denied her meeting with Karolina Mukova, which we were supposed to get in the second round. No, third round. Oh, God, what round are we in?
This is where this tournament's problematic. You know, here we are on Sunday. It feels like it's been going for ages. Kyrgios has won two matches, like big names, and he's just gone through the third round, and it doesn't feel
I've seen Heather Watson play three matches, and Daniil Medvedev has only played one.
Yeah.
Explain it to me. Anyway, I think that was supposed to be a third round match because obviously the seeds get a bye, but Osaka is not a seed. And she'd beaten Astra Sharma and Angelique Kerber. So, yes, she was supposed to play Karolina Mukova, who I realised I hadn't thought about in a blooming long time. And then who did she beat this week to remind us that she exists?
She beat Leila Fernandez pretty convincingly. Yes.
Don't I know it, having picked Fernandez to win the title. having had what I felt was some sort of moral victory by picking Sakkari to go to the final of Indian Wells and Alcaraz the semis, I've embarrassed myself this week. Matt and I both
went for Felix Auger-Aliassime, who's bombed out as well.
And I also Rublev went for lost 6-3,
6-love. Yeah,
I don't think anyone's faring brilliantly this fortnight, David,
no,
put it that
no.
way.
All right then, I feel marginally better.
Just imagine how our year-long predictions are looking with Barty's name splattered across them like roadkill. That's going to be absolute carnage. Anyway, we'll deal with that in 9 months' time.
Barty, you know, she could have a bit of consideration, couldn't she? And blooming wait until the end of the year, at least.
Mm. Anyway, at least it affects us all equally. Unless anybody predicted that she would do this, in which case I'll be grossly annoyed.
Didn't I say
anyway,
she might win
Mukova,
the calendar slam?
I've forgotten what point I'm even trying to make about Mukova. Yes, you did. Oh, God.
She would have done.
Anyway. Mukova. I forgot that she existed. She reminded me that she existed. And now we're going to forget again because she's got another injury. She is unlucky, isn't she? But she's so good when she's good. She's got so many tools, you know. She's a mini, I'm not going to say Barty. You know, she's got touch and feel and a bit of wizardry. And she's great for the game, but I'm going to forget she exists again.
This abdominal problem is the one that keeps recurring, isn't it?
Mm.
And that always worries me because that is such a difficult injury to get rid of because you use that part of your body all the time in tennis.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. It's at the centre of everything, isn't it? Quite literally. Before we move on to talk about some of the men's happenings, I said that we would come back to... Now, I don't know why I've done this in two segments because it means I have to say her name again. But I get the feeling I'm going to need to practice saying this name. So here we go. We're coming back to Linda Frvitova, who is a 16-year-old Czech player, a junior Grand Slam champion who... I'm guessing is an IMG player because she's been given a wild card into Miami this week and she has capitalised on it. She's now won, I think, three matches. she's beaten Elisa Mertens and today she beat Victoria Azarenka, former champion, of course, in Miami. One of the only women to have pulled off the Sunshine Double, winning Indian Wells and Miami back to back. And she did it in truly bizarre fashion. I mean, blistering fashion. She was awesome. I'm so glad, Matt, you alerted me to the weirdness that unfolded in this match because enabled me to go back and watch the weirdness and get briefed on it for the podcast, but also to watch a bit of this young woman's tennis because she's the real deal and her poise is extraordinary.
What sort of player?
Well, she's a lot like Azarenka, but 2.0, and just has these amazing instincts on that. She always picks the right shot. And I increasingly, my working theory is that that is actually the most prized component of the top players, picking the right shot.
Yeah, and I thought that word you used there, poise, was what I noticed when I watched her. There wasn't any sort of deference to Azarenka, but neither was there sort of the arrogance of that sometimes a junior player can have when they haven't necessarily done a lot yet.
Are you talking about Holger Rune, Matt? You can just name him.
Or Cecil Karatansheva. Remember her when she said she was going to kick Maria Sharapova's ass off all those years ago.
That's a shut your fuck up, isn't it? I'm going to kick your ass off. Anyway, Matt, sorry.
Sorry, I was just looking up who Holger Rune lost to this week.
just the assumption.
It's good to be across his losses.
Mochizuki, actually, he did retire. I think he might have a bit of a back problem, but anyway, it's not going great for him at the moment. Anyway, what I would say also about Fruvatova is that there's two of them. That this is Linda Fruvatova. There's also her younger sister Brenda. And they both won in back-to-back years. They won the tournament in Tarbes in France, Le Petit Zah, which is a real sort of marker of, you know, junior talent. I think a lot of players have, a lot of, you know, Gasquet, Nadal, Murray, they've all gone through there. There's loads of video on there of YouTube playing there. It's a great event. And they won it in back-to-back years. I think the only siblings to have ever both won it. And Brenda's a couple of years younger. She's coming as well. And Linda is here now. So, yeah, I think we're going to be saying their names a lot. I did check the WTA website. No pronunciation guide yet. So we are guessing.
I've sent Daniela Hantikova a message requesting a voice note.
Great.
Just confirming.
I can't do that.
Pronunciation.
So thank you.
She hasn't replied yet. But I'm sure it's at the top of her to-do list when she comes off air. I love the idea of them bringing back the names Linda and Brenda. Because let's face it, they've been out of fashion for a while. It's great. Imagine being 14 and called Brenda.
Marvellous.
You just mums know everywhere. Loads mums of people, and grandmothers everywhere are delighted.
Loads of people on social media, you know, are watching that match with Linda going, yeah, well, you wait till you see a sister. To their mum.
Yeah, but we did say that about Djokovic. We heard it said about Djokovic, didn't we?
Did anyone say it about Tsitsipas?
Not for very long. Although Petros won a 25k doubles the other day, I saw on Instagram.
Did he?
Yeah.
Wow, you are really across his highs and lows.
Correct.
Matt, the match involving Linda Fruvatova was dramatic and notable for reasons other than her precocious brilliance. Victoria Azarenka has just... I can't quite believe what I watched. I mean, you told me what happened and I went back and watched it thinking, well, there must be some context that Matt has failed to tell me. But as far as I could tell, same as you, there wasn't much context to explain what she did, which was, by the looks of things, just she was being roundly beaten, didn't fancy the fight, was pretty indignant about the fact that she was being hit off the court by someone half her age, and just picked up a bag and walked off. It's possible that she shook hands with her opponent. It looked, from what we could see on the footage, that she didn't. It's possible that she did briefly and it just wasn't caught on the camera, but it looked like she didn't. And it was a pretty low moment for Victoria Azarenka, for a great champion to behave like that.
Yeah, really, really bad look. The umpire was kind of pleading with her to say, look, just wait, we'll call the physio, we need to wait for the physio to come on, then they can make an assessment and, you know, then you can do what you want to do. And Azarenka was having none of it. She just shook the umpire's hand, picked up a bag and left. And I think, you know, it's always sort of difficult to, or I don't want to judge players for the, you know, for sort of why they retire, but I think there's certainly a way of doing it. And you know, even if she was feeling awful, I think there's a sort of respect to your opponent, a sort of a way of doing things, I think. And she didn't do any of those things. But as you said, it actually just looked like she didn't want a part of this match anymore. We'll wait to see what she says in press, if she goes to press. But yeah, it was just a really, really bad look from Azarenka, I thought.
It reminded me of when she just she came out to play at the October French Open.
Yes.
In a sort of ski suit, and it started raining, and she just picked up her bag and walked off.
Yeah. Said, "I live in Florida."
She did. I mean, this was less funny.
She was in Florida.
Yeah. It was a bad look. I think she'll receive a fine for it, because I think the rule is that you have to be signed off by a physio.
That's certainly what the umpire was saying.
You have to have that consultation. Yeah. So we'll see. Anyway, not a great look. But and there was this delightful interview with Vrbova after the match, where she was so respectful of Azarenka and so chuffed to be on the court with her, and chuffed to have beaten her. And I just thought, oh, it's such a shame that, you know, that wasn't reciprocated. And
I think I'm right in saying that Azarenka played last week in Indian Wells and was pretty emotional in the match that she lost.
She was. I don't know exactly, but I suspect the political situation in Belarus, being a Belarusian athlete, is extremely challenging for her at the moment. And I have certainly a degree of sympathy with her about that. But she elected to take to the court.
Yeah.
And that comes with certain responsibilities about behaviour. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see what she has to say.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
On to the men's tournament, and I mean, honestly, where what round are we at? Somebody help me. I've seen Kyrgios play twice.
He's been very good.
And been brilliant.
He really has been uneventfully good. Just really professional and efficient and just really good. And he's he beat Andre Rublev 6-3, 6-love. I think he was broken in the first game, Kyrgios, and then he just rolled away with it. And he actually said about Rublev, look, I don't think he had his best day. Oh, and his second serve isn't very good. And I mean, look, he made him look ordinary. I think it was a poor day for Rublev, but it was just so one-sided. And Fanini, I watched the match today. That was pretty one-sided as well. You never know how long this stuff's going to last with Kyrgios, but, well, it's the best he's looked in a long time. I'll say that without question.
But you won't go any further. David Law falling into the Kyrgios trap. Are you tempted? Are you tempted to fall?
Yeah, I mean, he's got Sinner or Carreño Busta next, and I could see him beating either one of those in the form he's in right now. And if you think about it,
he'll win that.
He only lost to Nadal, didn't he? And you can play well and lose to Nadal. Now, I still think with Kyrgios, it doesn't matter how on it he is. If you can push him into deep waters and make him last out there, eventually he may well end up capitulating and beating himself and finding something to get upset about. But he just looks, he's a heck of a player when he's on, isn't he? And so he's winning easily right now.
Well, I think ahead of that Rublev match, he had just received confirmation of the fine he'd be getting for the appalling racket throw at the end of that match with Nadal in Indian Wells, which was the maximum possible fine for that category of offence. I think $25,000. So it's possible that he was, you know, fired up by that.
Channeling.
You know, that he's finding things to rage against, which if he does it in the right way, I'm you know, fine, go with it.
I mean, he didn't look angry today at all. He just looked sort of zoned in. He looked really focused and motivated. And we said at the end of the Australian Open that we'd like to see him playing more with Kokkinakis and not just leaving it there. And they have. They've played, I think this is the third event since then that they've played together. I think it helps Kokkinakis being around him all the time in the player lounge, in the locker room. And it's every time his name is brought up, Kyrgios's face lights up. It happened in the interview after the match today. And I just think, yeah, he looks like he's in a good place. And I think that's a big part of it. So I don't know. I don't know what any of it means. It doesn't need to mean anything. All it means at the moment is that Kyrgios is playing well. And that is absolutely clear.
David, as we know, I think we all have new predictions to make in the newsletter this week. Will you be going for Kyrgios? Sucked in have you been?
That's a very good question. But he's playing the best tennis I've seen at the tournament so far. So probably, yeah.
After that Rublev win, he said, look, I know I can beat any player on any given day. That's me. That's who I am. And that is always, that is who he is, isn't it? That's how we think of him. That's his selling point. He's not going to string it together. He's unlikely to win a slam. But on any given day, he shows up and he can beat even the best. And I think that shtick has worn thin for me recently because it just hasn't been true. He showed up against Medvedev at the Australian Open. He really played well. He wasn't good enough. He showed up against Nadal in Indian Wells. It wasn't enough. It was very close, but it wasn't enough. That shtick has worn thin because actually against the very best, his best hasn't been good enough. And I wonder if that's been a bit motivating for him. I don't know.
He did say that he's had the best off-season that he ever had and that he feels as fit as he has in a long time. And so it does feel like that there are more component parts to being a top player in him just at the moment. Now, don't know how long that will last, but he gives me the vibes of 2017 Miami a little bit at the moment.
On what Catherine said, I think you can look at Kyrgios's results against top players and they would be at their worst over best of five. I don't think he's had that many really big wins in slams if you look at it, and also in latter stages of best of three events. You know, we have seen him do this sort of thing in terms of results before in early rounds and look amazing. He looked amazing in Indian Wells and then he played Nadal and he lost. Now he's obviously had better wins here in Miami, you know, Rublev, that's a proper win. That was unbelievable. It took 50 minutes. I switched over to watch the Sinner-Rusevori final set tiebreak and I missed most of the second set of Kyrgios. That's how quick and how sort of devastating Kyrgios was in that second set. I can get behind this Kyrgios that we've seen so far. It's been kind of addictive tennis, the way he's playing, and yet also really focused as well. But I would hold off on our sort of Kyrgios discussions until next week, I suppose, because that's when we're going to get to the latter half of a best of three tournament. And that's where, as you said, he's still got to kind of prove himself over the last couple of years because we haven't seen those results from him in a while.
Question for you both. Have you muted him on Instagram?
No, I haven't actually. But I only have the pod.
You're inflicting all of that PDA on yourself.
I only have the pod Instagram. I don't have a personal Instagram.
Oh, so you have a professional responsibility to be across all of Nick Kyrgios's PDA.
Correct.
What's PDA stand for?
Come on, David. Public displays of affection.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that. I don't know where to find that. I also don't know
Instagram.
How to
Nick Kyrgios, Nick Kyrgios's social media, David, okay. All of it, every day.
Right.
Anyway, he's clearly happy, and we wish him well. Speaking of Daniil Medvedev, he, I think, has only played one match. It was a win 4-2 over Andy Murray with Ivan Lendl watching on. What will Ivan Lendl have made of what he saw?
I think he will have felt that he's got something to work with based on the first set. I think Andy Murray displayed a bit of the forehand that we used to associate with Ivan Lendl coaching him from a few years ago. And then it reminded me that he just he didn't have to face Daniil Medvedev back then, because Medvedev's a heck of a player. He is so good. He diffuses so many games and makes things so difficult. And it's very hard to attack him. He's pretty much the ultimate test, I would have thought, for somebody like Murray. I think Lendl will fancy his chances of getting Murray competitive against a lot of players. Medvedev's really tough. He finds a way. By the way, Simon Briggs told me, and he's actually just sent me a little bit of a preview copy of a piece he's written in tomorrow's newspaper, which will be going online on the Telegraph website from 10:30 p.m. UK time tonight. An interview that the British press over there in Miami have done with Ivan Lendl and with Andy Murray in attendance as well, and really trying to understand why Lendl agreed to work with him, whether there was any hesitation, all that sort of thing. And he clearly feels that there's still plenty left in Murray. I mean, I don't think he'd be there, would he, unless he thought that. And between the two of them, I think that they feel, and it's, I think that the fact that Murray is not playing the clay court season, he's going to have basically 2 months of just hard graft now, trying to get ready for grass. And I think it's the right move. I really do. They're going to decamp now, I think, to Lendl's home. I think some of Murray's family is coming over. I was reading in the piece, and they're really going to make a proper go of this now, because the grass is where he can be competitive, or at least the best chance that he has of being properly competitive, hopefully at the sharp end of a tournament for him.
And he needs that reset, I think, Murray. He needs to snap out of this this pattern of results that he's in. You know, since the Australian Open, he's lost in the second round at every tournament. The Australian Open, Rotterdam, Doha, Dubai, Indian Wells, Miami. He's just stuck. And actually, there's been a little regression, I would say, compared to the back end of last year when he was beating Sinner, Hurkacz, Alcaraz. He was getting some really good results at the end of last season, and those have dried up a bit for him. So I think it's come at the best possible time. The sort of clay that he can step away from, the training block with Lendl, and then go fresh onto the grass. I think it's an exciting period now for Andy Murray over the next few months, whereas the last few months have been a bit of a grind, I think, and not the sort of results that he would have wanted. But yeah, I thought he played pretty well against Medvedev, but it looked like a guy, as you said, who's doing things that Murray isn't maybe that used to. You know, someone who can control service games really easily, but also be such a threat on return. You know, it's kind of amazing the way he controls his serve and his return, Medvedev. And yeah, it looked like a guy in his physical prime against a guy not at the moment. And I think, you know, Murray's never going to be in his physical prime, but I think he can be better than what we're seeing at the moment. And I sort of trust his partnership with Lendl to bring that out more than anything.
He said he might kick off his grass court season at the Challenger event in Surbiton, which is just an excellent sort of insider's ticket to buy to watch a bit of tennis in the UK. Hopefully not too expensive. Just a great place to go and watch tennis. What else has happened in the men's tournament? Early losses for Auger Aliassime. He lost to Ketsmanovic. Okay, Ketsmanovic, different player to what he was, you know, even 6 months ago. But still, you know, we'd both picked Felix Auger Aliassime to win this tournament, Matt, and I didn't feel that confident about my pick, but when I heard you'd picked him as well, I suddenly thought, oh, okay then.
And yeah, I'd have picked him as well, had you two not.
I mean, I don't understand his season, really. I don't get it. What's happening? Or is it just Ketsmanovic is really good now and we shouldn't read too much into it?
No, I think we should be a bit disappointed by that result for him. I don't know whether I would sort of go so big on his season generally. And I think it's just these two results, Indian Wells, Miami, have been
disappointing, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, taken together. You know, if there was one bad one and then a good run in Miami, you could kind of write off Indian Wells, I suppose. I think the reason I picked him was that, you know, he did lose early in Indian Wells. I thought he would have, you know, time to prepare for Miami, a kind of a little bit of a point to prove. He did quite well in Miami a few years ago, at the Hard Rock Stadium. I just, you know, thought the conditions might suit him. Yeah, it's a bad loss. And I watched the second set of that match and he wasn't competitive at all. Kecmanovic, a guy who plays a similar style in a way, you know, big, heavy, topspin forehand, you know, stands kind of behind the baseline and rips the ball. And he was just doing it an awful lot better than Ojeda Aliassime. Yeah, definitely a step back after a season which has been, you know, two or three steps forward, really.
Shapovalov also lost early. He lost today, in fact, didn't he? Or yesterday, perhaps, to Lloyd Harris. His season's gone astray since the Australian Open. Is this a give it time, a Jaime Delgado situation? I mean, I didn't see that loss, and perhaps you didn't either, David. So difficult one to put you on the spot But
I saw Ojeda Aliassime's still just worry match for as well, and I was very impressed with Kecmanovic, but when I see Shapovalov, I think he's lost to Harris before, and it's one of those. It seems to cause him trouble, but I don't have really any insight as to how things are going with Jaime Delgado. I think that is something that he needs to invest in, and I believe Jamie's a good solid guy to have in his team, and will tell him the right things. I think knowing Jaime a little bit, but it's the second time that Shapovalov's had a big result at a Grand Slam and then just fallen away and not done anything with it, not built on it. You know, had several tour events and Masters 1000s that just haven't yielded anything. And I find that disappointing, really, from Dennis's perspective, because the top players don't do that. You know, that you might do it once or twice, but on the whole, you keep coming and you keep delivering.
Yeah, his losses since the Australian Open are Lehechka, Rinderknecht, Vesely, Opelka, and this one, Lloyd Harris. You know, you can lose to a lot of those players, but it's not great.
You'd be picking him to win most of those, if not all of them, really, on paper, wouldn't you?
Okay, well, clay coming up. It's not necessarily the surface I associate most of them, but we'll see. Pressure's off, I suppose. Jensen Brooksby is still in the Miami Open. He will face Cameron Norrie next. Norrie is going to be almost certainly, I think, after Miami, a top 10 player, which is extraordinary. The man is a machine. He beat Hugo Gaston today. He's just so damn hard to beat. It's extraordinary. And there are these amazing quotes that have come out about the fact that he has huge lungs, disproportionately large lungs. He ended up in hospital having to have scans for something. I think he said about 5 years ago. And the doctor said to him, mate, are you a deep sea diver? Because you've got these enormous lungs. He thought, right, well, I can make something of this. And boy, is he making something of that. I mean, I didn't know having big lungs was a thing. I thought, you know, like the whole your arm span is the same as your height. I thought there was just a mathematical sum and it was in direct proportion to the size of other things on your body. And I now really want to know whether I have normal sized lungs. But yeah, Cameron Norrie has massive lungs and he is putting them to great use. Next up, he will play Jensen Brooksby, who by and large I think is brilliant for tennis. I love watching him. I find him quirky and weird and I don't quite know how it works, but it does. And he doesn't mind being a disruptor and I love that. But he crossed the line in his previous or his first round match, I think it was. I'm confused about what match it was, or all the matches. But he smashed his racket and it bounced and I think did just about make contact with a ball boy or ball man, as Matt has put in the notes, because they're grown adults in Miami, in a lot of the US tournaments, actually. He was given a point penalty, but he wasn't defaulted from the match. Punishments aren't harsh enough, are they? This is clearly a pattern of behaviour from men, a worsening situation with male players at the moment. It's not everyone, and yes, each one is a one-off incident, but there are a lot more one-off incidents happening. And in my view, the ATP have stitched themselves up with what they did in response to the Alexander Zverev incident in Acapulco, which is undoubtedly the most severe offence of all that we've seen by far. And by not issuing any kind of ban to him, any offence less extreme, which most are, even a quite extreme offence will be less extreme than what Zverev did in Acapulco, has to obviously be punished less harshly. So they've set the scale and the bar so high. The bar, it seems to be unofficially, that you have to cause proper harm to somebody, to an official or a lines person or a ball boy or someone in the crowd, in order to receive a punishment that will actually hurt. And that's really horrible because it feels now like we're just waiting for that to happen, because it will.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've stitched themselves up with just the way it's written. I think the umpires and the referees are probably doing all the right things in terms of carrying out what is written. And in this case, Brooksby just sort of flung his racket across the floor at quite a rate, and it's sort of, you know, I don't know whether it hit the lines judge's ankles or the ballman's ankles, or he jumped out of the way, but you know, Brooksby was in no control over that racket. He didn't know where it was going. He wasn't trying to hurt anybody, but he wasn't controlling himself in any way to avoid hurting somebody, and that's the problem. It's just reckless behavior, and that can't be allowed to just go unpunished, because people don't check themselves when they're carrying on out there. And I know again it contradicts with some of the love of aggro that we all have, but we don't want anybody getting hurt. And whilst neither does Jensen Brooksby, that much is quite clear. He doesn't want anybody getting hurt either. He nearly did hurt somebody, or that sort of behaviour is going to hurt somebody at some point, and that's going to be then too late. So rewrite the damn rule so that people maybe don't do those things, would be my advice. Brooksby gave out a fulsome, a long apology and what looked like a photo op with the ball man, which I don't quite understand why, but he subsequently deleted it from his Instagram page after posting it. But anyway, I don't really get social media sometimes, as you know.
It looked like someone had taken that photo from in the bush.
It did. It looked like a weird paparazzi-style photo. There were a lot of things about the apology sequence of events that made no sense to me. But I'm glad he did the apology. I don't know. Maybe we'll never know what went on there. Anyway, wholeheartedly agree with everything you've said, David. I think that's just about it for where we're at currently with the Miami Open. Taylor Fritz is still going. He beat Mikhail Kukushkin yesterday. He could so easily have lost that match. And he's just, you know, makes me think of what you said about Paul Anacone. He would play every week if he wanted to. You know, he's out there because he wants to be. And it's good to see someone with that appetite and love for the sport. It's really good to see. Plays Tommy Paul next, which I'm here for. Wasn't that a junior Grand Slam final? At least one, I think.
I think it might have been two in the same year. I think Tommy Paul won the French, and Taylor Fritz won the US Open, I think.
Yes.
And Opelka won Wimbledon in the middle.
Opelka won Wimbledon, yes.
Crikey,
yes.
You two and your junior knowledge. That's good.
So that's it for Miami. Obviously, we'll be back on Thursday with another update when I won't quite know what stage of the tournament we're at. And then we'll be back on Monday after the finals, and I'll definitely be clear on what stage of the Miami Open we're at. So if you can just hang in for that, and we can all go through the bumpy ride that will be Thursday's episode. We'll also hopefully have Stan Wawrinka and Dominic Thiem to talk about. They are making comebacks this week at a challenger event in Marbella. So we wish them well, because we'd like to see them both back and healthy and playing good tennis and ripping single-handed backhands, wouldn't we? So fingers crossed for them both. We have a weekly mascot, It's Heinz Ward, which is another excellent name. A dog, a beagle chow mix, which is not a mix I've ever seen before. But he's absolutely lovely. He's named after the beloved Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver, Heinz Ward the Human. David, is this someone you're aware of?
Can't say I was before today.
He sat there in his NFL sweatshirt and he's never even heard of Heinz Ward.
Not interested in the Steelers.
He's a fraud, ladies and gentlemen. Heinz Ward is owned by Karen Wu. I'm a big fan of Chow Chows, I have to say. They look like mini lions. They're gorgeous. And Heinz Ward is delightful. So thank you, Heinz Ward, for being our mascot for the week. David's mascot for the year is Darwin. Mine is Carter. Matt's is Gerald the Cat. Billie Jean's is Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. Chris Albert Lee and Kyle Weingartner are our executive producers and top blokes. Simon Briggs is the Telegraph's tennis correspondent. Thank you, Simon, for contributing to today's episode. Check out Simon's work. It is splendid and tremendous. And we have shout-outs, Matt. Who are they for?
We have Imogen McInnes, who is from Melbourne, but currently living in Zug in Switzerland for the last 11 years.
Oh, hello, Imogen. I really like the name Imogen.
Wow. Really good spread of geographical locations there. Was it McInnes, you said?
What a niche compliment. McInnes.
McInnes.
McInnes, like Derek McInnes, the central midfielder of West Bromwich Albion from 2000.
That's what we were all thinking, David. Do you know Zug? Do you know Zug as a location? Is that somewhere where they give away cows as gifts?
I'm aware of it.
Well, I'm sure it's lovely. Imogen, thank you for your support.
We also have Elaine Hayworth, who is Irish but living in Chelmsford.
Right,
hello, Elaine. I feel like Elaine's probably the third Fervitova sister.
That'd be good.
There's a 12-year-old about to come through. She's going to win the Le Petit Yard this year. Thank you very much, Elaine. One of my best friend's mums is called Elaine, and she is lovely. Elaine Thompson, the current 100-metre champion, Olympic champion.
Yes.
Elaine Thompson Hera, isn't
Thompson
it?
Thompson Hera, yeah. Yeah.
She was originally Thompson, now she's Thompson Hera.
Yeah.
But it's still Elaine.
Yes.
There we go.
We finally today have Scott Johnston from Aberdeen.
Hello, Scott.
And Scott was at the 1985 Wimbledon men's final, watching a 17-year-old Boris Becker beat Kevin Curran.
What a moment to be at. That is so cool.
History. That really is cool.
He entered a ballot from World Tennis Magazine and got three tickets.
Three?
Yep, for himself, his mum and his sister.
That's so cool.
Dishing them out like sweets back then. Well, that's really, really cool. I was going to reel off a list of tennis-related people with the name Scott, but just marvelling over the fact that you were there for that, Scott, is far cooler. So thank you very much for your support.
Neither of you two were even alive, were you?
No. No,
not
sorry,
even thought
sorry
about
that. No. Thank you to all our friends of the Tennis Podcast. We'll have another pod for you soon. If you want to become a friend, the link is in our show notes. Leave us an Apple Podcast review. Tell your friends, definitely sign up to the newsletter. Good things are happening there. And we'll be back on Thursday for our mid-second week Miami review pod, where we talk about tennis. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.